dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind, it's time for Mark D. Valenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Brain Burrow. I am your host, Mark D. Valenti. This is one of our Digging Deep sessions where we have an opportunity to really dig deep with our guest, who has an opportunity to share about his fears, values, motivations, goals, anything he wants to talk about. And really, it's up to you, to the viewer and listener, to try to understand more about our guest and see how it relates to you in your life as well. So I'm very pleased to have on the show tonight Roger Connors, and I'm going to hand it over to Roger with the big open-ended question: who exactly is Roger Connors?
Goodness, such a loaded intro, Mark. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Who am I? Gosh, well, you know, at the most basic core values, I suppose I would say I'm just an artist who longs to create alongside other artists who are passionate, and my favorite form of that medium is cinema. I love to create film, and I've loved to create film since I was very young, and that's kind of what's gotten me through some highs and lows. And so I've labeled myself a filmmaker because that is what I have consistently done most of my life. So at my core, I'm a filmmaker. But aside from that, I am someone who's still kind of just figuring out what my purpose is within this industry and beyond. So I'm an evolving specimen, I suppose. But I'm someone who loves film. I love horror, and I love everything about it and how it makes us think and delve deeper into our fears and examine them, and I really like to get to the meat of that.
Hmm. That was a fantastic answer, by the way, for being put on the spot. I thought that was really well thought out. Yeah, sure. So, you know, you mentioned about sort of getting into film at a young age, and we can talk about, as you said, the highs and lows since you brought that up, but why specifically film? I mean, there's lots of things you could have done that to distract yourself or kind of indulge in. Why film specifically?
You know, it goes back to, I mean, honestly, I suppose it goes back to being a child. And I just had a fascination with a lot of movies. But they're movies that were very fantastical. And like The Wizard of Oz was very defining for me as a kid. And it was a lot of questions that arose at a young age. How did they do this? How did they create the tornado? How did they transition from black and white to color in a single shot? How did they do these things and capture these moments? And I understood that they were translating an image to film. You know, they're translating a moment to film, and there was something that they had to do to execute that. As a kid, I understood that this was not reality. I could, you know, perceive that from a pretty young age. And I became really fascinated with the hows and the whats and the whys and everything that played into that. And so by the time I was a teenager and could get my hands on the first home video camera I could secure, I was creating film with my little posse of friends. 15, 16, 17, we're making home movies. And I'm always the one that's scripting it and costuming it and taking it to another level, that thinking it's, I'm doing something real, you know, I'm creating something that, you know, is going to do something. And then, you know, at 15, 16, you don't understand what distribution is and or copyright, but the passion was there and it just never went away. It never left my blood. And so that carried me into my 20s, and I started exploring the world of indie cinema, and I was lucky to get cast in a few projects that saw the light of day and actually got finished and got me a little clout, and just never stopped.
Yeah, that's incredible, right? I mean, that's a great way to say it. You were sort of like a freight train starting from a really young age and kept moving forward, and here you are today.
Yeah, so absolutely. And still plowing forward as fast as I can, sometimes through mountains, but still moving forward.
Well, and I think that's a great question, right? Sort of when you talk about mountains and the challenges, what is your biggest challenge, you know, in doing what you do or wanting to do what you do?
I would say there's a few. I think as an actor, it's mainly location. Mm. I live in Cleveland, and we have a film scene, but it's you know, it's growing, it's evolving. But I very much long to work with teams outside of Ohio. But being an indie filmmaker and an indie actor, and I know a lot of others within this industry are going to understand this, I have a career outside of this. I have a life outside of this. I have a partner, you know, and I have things that prioritize, and it's a matter of getting to these sets and making these connections and getting to know these people, and at certain points I have to decide, you know, time frame. How am I going to prioritize this? If it's out of state, how much time can I devote to this? How much time can I feasibly devote to this? And it is difficult, because in an ideal world I could do it all the time. But that's not always reasonable, at least on this level, you know. Aside from that, I would say budget, of course, when I'm creating. You know, we have all been part of Indiegogos and crowdfunders and so forth and so on. And when you're making your own product, you've got to have a reasonable rationale as towards what is possible. My first feature, Rebirth, was almost completely out of pocket. We made it for a couple grand. And when you're working with a very limited budget and wanting to create something that has the visual allure of a larger budget film, that's very difficult. That's very difficult to pull off. And so you have to be creative and make a lot of choices that fool people to think that your budget is bigger than it actually was. And that is tough. That is very tough.
Wow. Yeah, it seems like the budget theme comes up a lot in the world of indie horror as well. Great call out.
Yes, it does.
So given everything you put into it, right, your intrinsic motivation, your motivation to pay for it out of pocket, the challenges you had, when you finally saw, you know, the final film, how did you feel?
For Rebirth? Oh, yeah. Man. Well, I mean, Rebirth is a loaded story, because we started filming that back in 2015. It was conceived in 2014. It started filming in 2015, and it took 6 years to reach completion.
Wow.
And, I mean, we were a green team. You know, I was in my 20s, and I had acted in some projects, but I had only AD'd on a few projects at this point, and I had a few sour experiences in seeing films being led by individuals who I don't think prioritized the crew and the cast in the way, didn't appreciate them in the way that I think people deserve to be appreciated or respected on a set. And my goal as someone who is normally working in front of the camera is, if I'm going to make a project, I want to prioritize my team, which I think we were successful in doing. But from a technical angle, mm-hmm. We had learned a lot of lessons. Lessons about backing up footage, lessons about, you know, the dangers of not backing up footage. And we had two hard drives, but unfortunately, somehow, some way, both of them became corrupted. The second one ended up becoming so corrupted that it had to be sent out for salvage.
Wow.
And only a certain percentage of the footage ended up surviving. So we lost an entire cut of the movie, and then we lost a chunk of the footage as well. And for a certain point, I thought the movie would not see the light of day, and it was extremely disheartening. And I did not, I really didn't believe that the movie was going to be finished. And luckily, I had an amazing team come forward who specializes in situations such as this. Michael Coons and Malachi Polte of Disposable Entertainment. Disposable Entertainment, meaning it's the projects have been thrown aside that they save from the trash and they resurrect them, and they are fantastic. And they salvaged the movie, and they ensured not only that saw the light of day, but that it actually turned out to be something I'm insanely proud of. And we learned so much in this process as filmmakers, and what to do and what not to do. And so it has been an insane experience, but I'm very proud. I'm very thankful. And I, now know moving forward into the next project that I work behind the camera, when that day comes, which it will, I'm sure, things will be handled very differently. I am an actor foremost, let's just be clear.
Okay.
But I learned as a filmmaker, things need to be prioritized and treated with a lot of care and grace.
Hmm.
And I will never, ever, ever handle a film again with a carelessness that I feel I handled it my first project with.
Wow.
Which I learned to own up to, that there are things I learned from those mistakes. And you know what? I'm lucky to have a final product, because there are many filmmakers who don't have that, you know?
It's a fair way of looking at it. And there's a lot of people that we all make mistakes at different points, but it sounds like you humbly took that in and learned from it.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, I had to be humbled, and I think in this industry, it's important to be humbled early on, and that can be happened in a lot of different ways. But you know, we're making these films because we love to do it. You know, nobody wants to work with no money. Nobody wants to be making these with no budget or with limited means. And I think the indie filmmakers are a ragtag group of diehards who are so passionate about what they're doing and their love of the craft that they're going to do no matter what. You know, we are going to make these films no matter what because we love it. And we're going to bite the bullet and we're going to put up with it and all the stress that comes with it and all the errors and mistakes and mishaps. And there's a lot to learn, but you can't say we don't have drive and motivation and determination. I've met a lot of people who are very driven, and I'm proud to be working amongst them.
Yeah, that's a great call out to your colleagues and friends that are in the industry for sure. So, and you bring up a great point about motivation and drive. What drives you? What gets you out of bed in the morning and just kind of keeps driving you forward?
You know, I think, like, I feel that I have been lucky to have a few projects that really capture some moments that I'm super proud of, you know, whether it be behind the camera or as an actor. And like I said, I mainly consider myself as an actor just because that's the longevity of my career has been focused on that. I'm always striving to do better. You know, a lot, you'll hear a lot of actors say that they are never completely happy with their performance. And I think that's a good thing. If I ever get to a point where I'm thinking I'm giving the best performance I'm capable of giving, I'm not growing. I'm plateaued, and I don't want to plateau. I want to continue to evolve as a performer. I want every performance to be better, if not better, more unique, or coming from a different place internally or what have you. And so it's the drive to watch a film and at least have moments where I'm like, God, I'm so proud I went there. I'm so happy I let myself explore that aspect of that character because I haven't done that before. And I don't think I'll ever be completely happy with a performance because actors, we critique ourselves to an extreme. But those moments, you know, those moments where you connect with your material and you have that moment, that feeling of pride, that is so satisfying. I want to continue to have that because I want to see the evolution and growth within my abilities. I never want to stop growing as an actor.
Yeah, fantastic summary on that. You know, on the show in the past, I've talked about intrinsic motivation, right? Which is you're not doing it to get approval from others. You're not doing it. I mean, obviously, we all do things to get paid to because we have to live. But there's a certain point where you're doing it to learn and grow. And I think that's that intrinsic motivation you're speaking of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, I mean this in the best way possible, but again, as indie performers, filmmakers, what have you, there's a certain level of, dare I say, selfishness. But again, it's not a bad thing. It's something about us as performers that we long to appease. And I think if you're a real diehard fan of the craft, if you're not creating, you're feeling deprived. And if you're not evolving that skill, you're feeling deprived. And we need to have an outlet for that. And so, yeah, I mean, in a way, it's selfish to want to continue to have these experiences. But it's a healthy selfishness. It's something that we deserve to have because everyone has their niche or their passion or what they love. So, well, we happen to love making film, being on film, portraying characters, delving into the meat of a role, and we, you know, we deserve to have those experiences. Everyone who loves the craft deserves to be part of it and enjoy it and indulge in it.
Beautifully said, by the way. Yes, and I think, you know, when I hear you talking, you know, it's a fine line. On one end of the spectrum, you have people that are just, you know, I'm perfect, I don't need to improve. But on the other end, you have people that say, I'm no good, you know, that self-deprecating behavior. But you're squarely in the middle there. You have a healthy balance of, as you said, we all have some level of self-doubt. It's what drives us to continue to improve and the ability to know that we're not perfect and move forward. So, but not everybody has that. So I'm wondering, where do you, Roger, get that ability, that very emotionally intelligent approach to balance, you know, knowing you're not perfect, but being okay with you're not perfect?
That Your questions and are great, by the way. This is fantastic because I'm so used to hitting some basic points and be like, oh, the great interview. But this is very introspective. I appreciate you asking such thoughtful questions.
Thank you for answering them.
For sure. You know, I think as a I honestly I think part of it has been my journey as a queer man, younger. You know, in my 20s, I was very much somebody who beat up on a lot of aspects of who I am, including my physicality and my weight. And I went through like the struggle of just loving myself. And I think, you know, when I got to a certain point where I just came to terms with being happy with a lot of aspects of who I am, including my talents and my skill sets. And not to say I'm completely satisfied, because, yeah, there's points that I will pick at myself or be unhappy with a certain performance to a certain extent, but like I said before, I've also learned to realize and acknowledge the moments where I've given something my all and elevated my performance, and there's a reason I'm in that role. And if someone is generous enough to bestow a role upon me, I do genuinely believe I'm someone who works hard for it. And I know I am, because I know the amount of time and effort, personal time, I put into these roles. So I can step back and at the end of the day and see a performance, or even if it's a product that I'm not even happy with the final project for whatever reasons, I still see the moments where I say, you know, I worked hard in this project. I know it, and I can see the results, because there are moments where I can see me giving it my all. And is it 100% the ideal picture I had painted in my mind when I was imagining what this was going to be like? No, it never is. No, I don't think any artist can ever say, I painted the exact picture that I was imagining. No, you know, an artist sits there and they adjust and they paint and they repaint and they restart the project. You know, artists in general are individuals who tend to tear ourselves down. But then eventually you get to a point where you just accept the project for what it is, and then you move on to the next. And I think learning to do that is the healthiest thing you can do as an artist, because we'll never be 100% happy. Mm-hmm. But it's because we're perfectionists, and we all have an image in our minds of what something is supposed to be. And when you're collaborating with a lot of people, every single person on that set also has an image in their mind of what that's supposed to be. And they're never going to be 100% the exact same image. You know, it's learning to collaborate and you know, make exceptions in certain moments, and understand that maybe someone's made a decision with a costume piece you don't like that you're wearing, or sure, something, whatever it is, that you may not be thrilled with it, but in the end, it for the greater good, you know. And I've understood that even if I'm not completely thrilled with something, how it translates from me, mm-hmm, at least I helped that project become what it is. And that, at the end of the day, it's the director's final vision, and that's my job as an actor.
Yeah, that's a great way to say that about the role of the director in all of this, and then the role of the actor, of course, as well. And, you know, again, the way that you're talking is very, as I said, emotionally intelligent, not only about yourself and being self-reflective, but the way you collaborate with others. So I'm wondering if you could talk about a time where you had challenges in collaborating with others. And you don't have to name names. I'm not asking you to do that. But I'm wondering, how have you been able to sort of, you know, maybe you had a rough day because you didn't, you know, get a chance to get enough sleep, or maybe there's other triggers that go on. How have you been able to work through situations where collaboration's not been as easy as perhaps it could have been?
You know, I think and this was a very stressful experience, but, you know, I use a phrase that I call the gift in the problem. Any challenge, any issue, any dilemma, any problem that's thrown at us, if we make it through it, mm-hmm, there's something to learn. There's something to take away from it. There's some way to grow. No matter how hard it is on us, if you come out of it on the other end, there is some positive you can take away from it. It doesn't mean it wasn't challenging or traumatic or what have you, but you evolve and you grow from that experience. And I, early on in my film career, the first film I did, I was really lucky to do a film that was just really well handled. Beginning to end, the production was really, really tight. And I was young and I was spoiled by this great experience. And I thought I was the bee's knees. Like, I just, I, you know, I was young, and I thought every experience was going to be like this. And so then I went on to another project not long after, and it was the opposite. It was poorly managed, poorly scheduled. The script was constantly evolving when there was a script, evolving in the moment, things changing, characters being added at a whim, and it was a mess, and it was very stressful, and it was negative, a negative experience. And I've had a few experiences with filmmakers who just came to set ill-prepared, and I think when you get to a certain point in the industry, if you experience enough abuse, I think that is a certain level of abuse to be mistreated on a film set. I know a lot of the actors who are listening to this know what I'm talking about. I think you start to realize how precious your time is and how important it is to ensure that people respect your time. And whether you're working for pay or for free, because I've done both, and I know plenty of the other individuals who have partaken in this podcast or are listening or, you know, out there in general can say the same on this level. You devote yourself to one of these projects because you see potential in it. That's what it comes down to. I tie myself to a project because I see the potential in telling a story. Well, to a certain extent. But it gets to a point where you start to realize that your time is not being respected. And I've learned now over the last, you know, 15 years that I've been doing this, that I can only take so much abuse of my time. And it gets to a certain point where it's disrespectful. You know, I'm in my mid-30s now. And as I said earlier, I have a life outside of indie film, and it's a great life. It's a rich life. I have a great partner. I do wonderful things with my friends. I really love what I have. And I love making film. But when working on a project starts to drag on and on and on, and time is wasted and you're on a set double the amount of time that you really need to be because individuals are not scheduling, they come to set ill-prepared, they don't know what they're filming, the script is not completed, the location is not scouted, these are things that are not my responsibility. Mm-hmm. So why is my time being wasted? So it gets to a certain point where I've learned to just say no. It's gotten to a certain point where I've learned to say, you have this much time left with me. And after that, I cannot allow you to abuse my time anymore. And I think that's really an important learning tool for anybody working in the independent industry, because there are plenty of individuals who can take a very small amount of money and make something amazing from it. And there's going to be individuals out there who will somehow find a way to make a sum of money and not know what the heck they're doing with it.
Hmm.
And they will manage that money poorly, and they will manage your time poorly, and they will, in turn, treat you poorly. And it's all about, at the end of the day, the self-respect and learning when to say no and when to say stop.
Yeah, that's a great tie back to that specifically about the ability to say no, the ability to assert yourself as a valuable human being whose time is valuable and whose craft is valuable. And, you know, it's... And when somebody's abusing that, being able to speak up about that.
Yeah. Yeah. The best thing that could have happened to me is honestly being on a series of poorly managed sets. Because I learned what I don't want to take away from independent film.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for summarizing that. As you may or may not know, I've been on a few sets myself. I only just started doing this fairly recently. And even in the short amount of time that I've done this, I've seen what you're talking about. And a lot of people just, again, people that with their time and just feeling a bit struggling with ambiguity, which is actually a question I have for you, because there's a lot of ambiguity in the world, not only just in film, of course, and not just on set. How do you deal with ambiguity?
Oof, that's a difficult question. Do you mind elaborating?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking that question. Yeah, so, you know, in the imperfect world that we're in, right, there's always ambiguity. There's things that aren't clear to us. There's, you know, we go and we talk to somebody, we're not clear about their intentions. There is no schedule for the day. There's haziness, let's just say, about things. And it's just the reality of life, and sometimes there's more of that haziness slash ambiguity, and sometimes there's less. So for you, Roger, how do you kind of maintain your center whenever you're dealing with that haziness around you?
Okay, so I think that's a very interesting question. I do grasp what you're asking with that. Okay. I think there's a lot of individuals in the industry that make promises right off the bat. I've heard so many people say, oh, I have this distro with this company, or we've got a deal here. This movie's we're gonna make this much money. And, you know, again, for people starting off in the industry, like, you hear these things and it gives you a lot of hope, and you believe it. And I think, again, like, having my soul crushed a few times has helped, to be honest, because now I am sure to be forward with my expectations early on. I ensure to ask for a script before I absolutely sign on to a project. I don't let the promises of what is claimed to be blind me from the potential for failure, because I've seen so many projects either turn out to be something completely different from what was promised or not turn out at all. I've seen a lot of filmmakers go film to film to film to film to film and not release any of them. And I've learned to realize when promises are coming out to be empty. And I think it's a matter of, like, a situation like, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. I've been fooled more than twice, and I finally get to a point where I've just learned when to say no, and I've learned that it's important to be a straight shooter and just be straightforward from the get-go and not allow anything to be vague. And if something sounds vague, clarify it. And if it's not clarified, demand that it is. What are your expectations from me? And if I'm not understanding it, I need to make sure that you, as the other individual I'm talking to, you as the filmmaker or whatever the position is, I need to ensure that by the end of this conversation, before I accept a role or whatever, I know what I'm getting into. Because it's very easy for someone to tell you that something is going to be great, that something is going to turn out great, that something's going to make a lot of money. Everyone in this industry wants to make a lot of money. But words are only words. Contracts, however, are words on paper. And I've learned that when I have a contract and I sign that contract, I need to know exactly what I'm getting into.
That is phenomenal advice. And again, people can make promises all day long, and until things are actually written down and signed and clarifications are made, it's all just words. And I really like your answer about how do you deal with ambiguity slash haziness slash vagueness, which is you ask for clarification. It seems simple enough, but it actually goes back to your point about being able to assert yourself and who you are, and also assert your desire to know what the heck is going on and what the expectations are. So I think that's a phenomenal answer.
Yeah, you have to learn to not take any BS in this industry. And nobody deserves to be walked all over, whether they know it or not, because there's a lot of times I've realized that I'm being walked all over in the midst of the walking. Like, I'm already being stepped on, you know, and I've learned the telltale signs to look out for. And if I see any red flags, I question it. And if I don't get an answer that appeases me, I'm not doing the project. Again, it comes back to respecting my time.
Yeah.
Because if I have any warning signs that my time will be wasted, well, there are other things I could be doing with said time.
Yeah. Well said. The opportunity cost of your time makes sense. So we are actually, speaking of time, about out of time. So I'm going to ask you one final question. If the audience were to take one thing away from this discussion today, what would you hope it would be?
Because of the material we got into, which was really fascinating, and thank you again for asking the questions you've asked, because it made for a very unique experience, so thank you.
My pleasure.
I'm going to tap into something that is becoming a very important thing for me as an actor and as someone who went through what I went through with my project. Creating Rebirth was a trying experience. It was a, at times, devastating, heartbreaking experience. However, I vowed to myself that until my freshman project was finalized, I would not waste others' time. I would not move on to directing another project until I either had a completed project to show, no matter how weak it is, or absolutely knew without any doubt that the film was so lost that I would have to publicly own up to that. The fact that we were not technically prepared, which is a difficult thing to say as a young filmmaker, as a green filmmaker, to own up to your mistakes. And I was very much at a point where I was accepting this is very much what could be happening. Luckily, that did not happen, But I've seen a lot of filmmakers, as I said before, not complete projects and move on to others. And there are exceptions to this. However, I know plenty of people who have all of the footage, who have gone through the entire process, who have cuts of their movies, who have scored them, who have made promises to people and chosen for whatever reason to not make good on those promises. I feel on this level, you as a filmmaker owe something to your team, your talent. It may not be financial, but you owe them something to make up for the time that was given to you to help create this vision. And if the vision is there, no matter what, at the end of the day, no matter if it doesn't match exactly what your vision was to begin with, you owe the other people that supported you, that you rallied to come together, you owe them something. And it really is, it angers me to know that there are filmmakers who are now on their fourth, fifth, sixth film and not completing other projects. And again, I said there are exceptions to this rule, but I know that there is a large number of individuals who have just gotten bored with it. They want the thrill of being on set, and they don't want to put up with the stress of editing, because editing is stressful. Well, you know what? You start a job, and you finish it. Mm. And if your job consists of bringing out a large number of individuals to help see that job through, well, you certainly owe them a final product. And I don't care how it turns out or how it doesn't match your dream goal. It's not just about you as the filmmaker. It is about your talent and your team and those that support you and those that came out and supported you through the process. And to not finish a film, I think, is shameful. And I personally stayed true to my goal, which was to see my project through to fruition. Mm. And now that it's done, and now that it's finally seen the light of day, I will consider moving on to my next. I think there's some other individuals out there who need to think along the same lines, because I know that there's a lot of talent out there that's pretty devastated that certain things that they were promised, certain roles that they're proud of, certain performances that they were really, really proud of, they have nothing to show for it. They have no real footage. They have nothing. If you can't give them a film, at least give them a scene.
Yeah.
At least give them something to make up for their time. I think this comes back again to wasting people's time and respecting people's passions. I don't know. I've had my heart broken a few times, and I had plenty of films that I never saw anything for it, and I sure wish I did. So to filmmakers out there, I guess it's one of those things that I know most of you absolutely do respect your talent. For those of you who are sitting there with six movies stockpiled and not doing anything with them, well, I hope you're taking care of your team.
Hmm. That was wonderful, by the way, Roger. I know there's a lot of people out there who I know personally, as you do, who are experiencing that. So I think the message to filmmakers is respect people's time, and you have a responsibility for your team. So that was a beautiful way to end the segment. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. And responsibility is the word,
yeah.
I would say. Thank you for saying that, because I absolutely think when you choose to take on such a large endeavor, mm-hmm. it becomes your responsibility to see it through. To whatever extent you can manage, mm-hmm. you do absolutely owe something to these people. They don't owe anything to you. They're not. Some filmmakers out there think that their name should be up in lights, and that just by working with them, that is enough payment. That's never the case. I don't care who you are.
Mm.
You owe your talent the respect to give them what they were promised or what they anticipated.
Yeah. And that is a fantastic lesson, not only in the world of film, but in any situation. If you're in a position of power and responsibility, then it is up to you to help the rest of your team get where they need to be. So fantastic. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to thank you again for sharing that. And I want to thank you for being on the program today, Roger. It was great to hear your perspective and your in-depth perspective on life and time and assertiveness in this world of film.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a fantastic interview, and it was extremely insightful, and it was something I really enjoyed this. So thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you again for having me.
My pleasure. It's why it's called Brain Burrow, right? Kind of digging a little bit deeper there, so it makes sense. So thank you for the compliment on that. And I want to thank, of course, the listeners and the viewers who joined us today. And this is Mark DiValenti for Roger Connors and Brain Burrow. Have an amazing rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram @ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.